All right, guys, welcome once again to your High Gravity Mail podcast. I'm Brad Howard, and today I've got a very special guest. His name is Greg Greenway, and the theme for this week is infiltrating high-status social circles, which is a little bit tricky. It takes some techniques and some know-how and some things like that, and you know, Greg's got a really, really interesting story and some awesome ideas on how to do these things. And you know, Greg, I appreciate you stopping by, man.
Oh, mate, thanks a lot for having me, man. I'm really looking forward to talking with you and your guys on this, and you know, I'm really appreciative to be here.
Yeah, definitely. So, all right, so first and foremost, let's explain the accent.
I'm British, yes, as much as I've tried to Americanize it up so, you know, you guys can understand me, it still comes out. So, yes, the accent is still there.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, it's weird. I was telling somebody the story of our Vegas story the other day and how just randomly you flew into town and I'm walking through the casino going to the pool and bam, yep, there you are.
that was
pretty funny. You were like, Brad. I was like, what? I was like, oh, okay. and sure enough, what were you doing?
Yep,
hanging out with a cool girl, and you know, we got to shoot the breeze. So, you know, I mean, and we had just met in New York not 10 days before, so it was like bam, yep, bam. I was like, man, this guy, he knows what's up. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. So now you obviously mentioned being British, and you know, you've told a story to me, you know, while we were in Vegas that was really kind of fascinating. So I think I want to go into that as far as, you know, what happened when you moved to LA and how quickly you kind of moved into some of the higher status social circles there, almost effortlessly. Good gracious, I can't even talk today. you know, and I've had to do some of the same things when I used to travel and do consulting, you know, only on town for 2 months. So, you know, these type of techniques work really well and they're very valuable. So let's get in that part of the story. All right.
Sure. You know, one of the stories I told you, it's kind of become, and this is the kind of story I tell friends when I first got to LA, you know, about my experiences, and it kind of got me a little bit, got me quite a little bit of famous, which is a bit embarrassing. But I got to Los Angeles. I made a decision when I was in the UK, you know, I wanted to go live somewhere else, and I decided to move to LA. And within 3 months of being there, I mean, I landed, I didn't know anyone, I had, you know, just a few $100 to my name, and within 3 months, I've been invited to dinner at the Playboy Mansion, and I had the governor of California buy me a glass of whiskey, and I'd be flown to Tahiti on a private jet with just one other guy, seven girls, and I was dating a former Miss USA contestant, and I managed to do that all in a very, very, very short space of time, using a specific process of accessing social circles, which I had been developing in the UK. I'd been, you know, this all kind of started a long, long time ago, on my 18th birthday, when it was my 18th birthday. I was getting ready to, you know, go out. I was dating this really cool girl at the time. You know, I'd met her a lot earlier, so I hadn't like met her when she became cool, but you know, we grew up together. She got really cool. She was, you know, one of these, you know, good looking girls that everybody wanted to be around, typical socialite. We all went out for my birthday, my 18th birthday, which is, you know, supposed to be the big one. That's one that's supposed to be one that is really, really, and I was really looking forward to it. I'd spent all week thinking about it. I was getting ready. And she knew a couple of people in London, and there's this brand new nightclub that had just opened up. And she'd said, you know, I can get us all into this nightclub. I've got a friend who hosts there. Let's all, you know, go and hang out there. And at the time, I had no real experience with that part of London. I mean, where the nightclub was located, it was like this mythological place where, you know, all the celebrities and all the stars go out. And I, you know, at 18, I had no experience with that. So we got down there and we went to a bar first where we were just meeting some of the other people and meeting her, you know, her connection to this nightclub. And the guy was, his name was Jody. And I remember Jody really well because when we got there, I only knew her. I only knew Lauren. She was the only person that I knew there. But at the same time, I kind of started being, you know, ignored a little bit. And that really started to, you know, that really started to affect me. I started getting upset because it's your 18th birthday. You kind of think, you kind of have these visions that, you know, everybody's going to be, you're going to be like the center of attention and everyone's going to be there for you. But, you know, I was kind of becoming an outsider in my own, you know, my own party. Yeah. So, but I was noticing this guy, Jody, and this guy, he was just, you know, he was, to watch him was incredible because he was nothing to look at. He was like 5'6", 5'7". He was overweight. He wasn't particularly good looking, wasn't really dressed that well, but every single person around him, I mean, this guy was just magnetic. All the guys were just coming up to him, kissing his ass. All the girls were just fawning all over him, flirting with him, laughing at his jokes. Like, the managers and the waitresses kept coming up to him, giving him free drinks. So I'm just thinking, wow, you know, what is this guy's secret? This guy's just, you know, he's just completely rocking the place, but he's just like a completely normal guy. So, and we left the bar to go over to the nightclub, and, you know, I was kind of lagging behind because I'm pretty much moping around at this point. You know, I've been totally ignored for the last like hour or so. Mm-hmm. So we get to the nightclub, and as they're letting people in, the lady with the rope who's, you know, lifting the rope to let people in, I'm at the back. But as I get to the nightclub, she stops me and is like, whoa, hold on, where are you going? And I said, I was trying to explain to her, whoa, hold on, I'm with, you know, that people. And she kind of turned around to look to see where I was pointing, but they'd already gone inside the nightclub. So she was like, well, look, I don't know who you're talking about. You'll have to get someone to come out and get you. So I'm standing outside, right? And if you've ever been, my birthday is in January. And if you've ever been to the UK in January, it is a cold, miserable time of the year. I mean, it's cold in the UK all the time. January's particularly cold and miserable. So I'm standing outside, and I start texting Laura. I'm like, hey, you know, I'm stuck outside. I think maybe you guys have forgotten I'm here. Can you come get me? I mean, even having to send that text on my birthday was bad enough. But, you know, worse. I'm standing out there. 20 minutes go past. Half an hour goes past. It's freezing cold. You know, I'm on my own, on my 18th. And, you know, finally I get a text back from her. And she's like, hey, you know, I've tried. I don't, you know, you don't really know anybody here. You're not really part of the group. I can't come out and get you. I'm thinking to myself, are you joking? Really? This is my birthday, right? My friend has left me to go and party with a bunch of other people, and I'm just stuck outside. And that was, you know, a couple of things had happened before then, but at that point, you know, that was like a kick to the groin. I was like, okay, you know, I'm never going to let this situation happen again. A situation where, because I don't know someone or because I'm not part of the right social circle, I'm never going to let a scenario where I can't experience something just because I don't know the right person. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just people. And one of the things that I'd noticed while I was standing outside there was just, you know, the quality of the women walking into the club. I was just like, wow, okay, this is, you know, being a 18-year-old kid from, you know, the outskirts of London, I'd never seen, you know, women like this. And there was just hundreds of them going in there. So I made a decision that, hey, I'm going to figure, you know, this social circle stuff out, because there's got to be a way to do it. You know, I get pretty relentless when I get something in my sights. And so I spent the next months, years, you know, just learning everything they could learn about, you know, social interaction, social psychology, the attraction of the psychology of attraction. I try to find every single well-connected person I could find, you know, study them. I actually even met Jody, the guy who, you know, got sorted. I actually met him, you know, a few months later. And when I met this guy, started getting to talk to him, started to get into, you know, following around. And I found that, you know, despite everything that, you know, that was going great for Jody, I mean, he was dating a runway model. The guy knew like 5 or 6 personal, like he knew billionaires personally. He got flown all around the world. Like, he was one of the, he'd go to all these celebrity parties, all these award shows. Dude lived at home on his sister's couch, and he was unemployed, didn't even have a job. And at this point, I was like, right, okay, wow, how's this guy doing this? And being able to spend some time around him, I got to see his technique and, you know, what he was doing. And so I started taking what I'd learned from Jody. I started taking what I'd learned from, you know, observing other people. And then combined that with everything I'd read in books and the seminars I'd gone to and the videos I watched. And I started going out and practicing. And I honed, you know, I stumbled across this kind of framework that is hidden behind single type of social circle, regardless of the social circle of like your water cooler at work, all the way up to like the celebrity social circles, they work in the exact same way. So I started using this framework to access social circles in London. Started accessing them in London. I had some pitfalls. I had some, sometimes it went well, but as I was practicing, I started to refine it to the point where I could literally access any social circle anywhere in the world. So at this point, when I decided I was going to move to the United States. Normally, you know, when you decide you're going to move halfway across the world, some people can kind of have a bit of apprehension about that. You know, I don't know anybody out there. I don't know if this is going to work out for me. Like, what if I'm all alone, etc. I don't have any of those fears because this was a framework that had been working so well in the UK. And I'd actually started teaching it to other people at this point, and they'd gone and practiced, and they were getting some even crazier results than I was getting. So I was totally confident I'd be able to move halfway across the world and, you know, access any type of social circle that I wanted to. It happened to Los Angeles, and within 3 months, I'd met the governor of California. I was dating a former Miss USA contestant. I'd been invited to the Playboy Mansion for dinner, and you can pay to go to the Playboy Mansion, but I actually got invited to come for like their Sunday dinner for all the playmates. And I got flown to Tahiti on a private jet, all expenses paid. I didn't have to put my hand in my wallet at all, and it was just me, just one other guy, and seven girls. So it's and that's all because of what happened to me on my 18th birthday, that I went through this crazy process to try and figure all this stuff out and came up with this blueprint of actually being able to access any social circle, regardless of how big or how small.
Yeah, you know, you brought up a couple of interesting points, and, you know, I can verify 100% just about everything you're saying. First of all, I can't think of a worse feeling than everybody else being able to go in somewhere and you having to sit outside. And I know a lot of guys have felt that in the past. You know, it's to the point now where I'm not even going to go anywhere if I have to wait in line. If I can't just walk in, I don't even want to go, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, and I know that doesn't sound snobby or snooty to you because you understand what I'm talking about. But, you know, it's not really a snobby or snooty thing. But, you know, it's really strange. It's like in these type of situations, you actually are spending money to get access to the things that all these other people in these high status circles are getting for free, which is kind of important to know. And the second thing that you brought up that's really important, I discovered this myself too, is that once you understand how to crack social circles, and it doesn't matter if it's, I mean, high status ones are definitely a little bit of a different beast than other ones. But the fact of the matter is it does amazing things to your confidence, knowing that you can go anywhere, anytime, by yourself if you want to, and you're going to be okay, and probably have fun or meet people or, you know, walk away with, you know, a connection, you know, do business with or something like that. So, you know, that's really, really powerful. So that's kind of the hope that I want to give people by listening to this. So with that being said, what are some of the top techniques and frameworks that you use to kind of infiltrate? Now, I like saying infiltrate, but it's not shady or not sneaky or anything like that. I mean, most of these tactics, I'm quite sure, are as above ground as you can think. So,
and I like infiltrate as well. I just think it's, you know, it kind of shows. Because sometimes you can almost look at social circles as their own, you know, private little countries. But as long as you infiltrate them in an ethical way, everybody's fine. Right. But the number one problem that I found, and this is, you know, when I first started doing this, and this is the biggest problem that anybody doing social circles is going to have. And, you know, if out of everything that I could tell, you know, I could teach you a million different things about social circles, this is by far the most important thing. Like, this is the one problem that everybody has, you know, when they're trying to do social circle, and it's not getting introduced to the social circle, not being able to have someone introduce you. Because when I first started doing this, and when I first started practicing this, I was able to pretty quickly being able to meet someone and get to a stage where I could spend time with them on a one-on-one basis. Mm-hmm. Be able to have a coffee, we'd be able to have a drink, you know, we'd be able to, you know, just hang out. But that person would still, you know, on the weekend go and do, you know, their own thing and go have like these crazy adventures and, you know, but tell me about it later, you know, oh yeah, this weekend I got to do X, Y, and Z. This was really cool. And I hadn't got over that hump. And this definitely more applies to the high-end social circles. The, you know, the regular social circles won't have this issue as much, but the high-end ones, you know, I was able to spend time with the guy on a one-on-one basis. but, you know, he wouldn't actually, you know, or she wouldn't actually introduce me into their social circle. And that was the biggest sticking point I had. And, you know, having been teaching this for such a long time now, it's the same biggest sticking point a lot of guys have. You know, they'll say, hey, I've managed to meet this person. He's part of the social circle that I really, really want to be in. But, you know, he just doesn't want to introduce me to the rest of his friends. And, you know, everybody's aware of this. You know, everybody had a friend they would hang out with. You know, you'd have to spend time with them, but you wouldn't introduce them to like your workmates or like your university friends. You know, you just, there's a discrepancy there. And this is the biggest problem that anyone has. And it comes down to a framework that I call the rapport ladder. And the rapport ladder is, you know, it's a framework that underpins every human-to-human social interaction. There's, you know, there's quite a few levels. The main level we're going to talk about is getting to what I call introductory rapport. And that's a level where somebody will actively introduce you to their social circle. And that is the most important level we need to get to. And the way to get to that level of rapport is using what I call rapport accelerators. And there's six of them. I'm not going to go through every single one. I'm going to give you guys an overview of the six and then talk about my favorite, most effective. But so the first rapport accelerator is familiarity. And this is sometimes also called the mere exposure effect. And it's the scenario whereby the more somebody sees something, and in this example, the more someone sees you, the more that they like you, especially if they're seeing you in a positive light. This is why, you know, the PR industry is like a multi-billion dollar industry in the world. I mean, they've studied ads. They can just see that the more somebody spends time, the more someone sees something, the more they like it. So the way that you exploit familiarity is, you know, by creating a routine and by being in the same social circles over and over again, so people get to see your face.
Yeah, I think that's called propinquity or something like that. The actual psychological term, if I'm not mistaken, I think that's what it is. There's an actual term for that. You know, the more you're exposed to something, the more you are more likely to accept and like it, and that type of thing. So that's why it's not to cut you off, but just kind of interject this. That's why most people meet people through social circles, as far as dates and girlfriends and things like that, because you're exposed to the same person over and over again, and it just works like that. So anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
So that's familiarity. That's the first one. The second one is commonalities and similarities. And they're slightly, I put them together. Similarities is how similar you are to someone, and commonalities is what you have in common with that person. So two people can be similar but not have anything in common, and vice versa. Again, this is something that when you build, when you interact with somebody, if you can demonstrate that you have things in common, or if you guys are similar, your rapport with them will accelerate as well. And, you know, there's little techniques, especially in conversation, that you can actually demonstrate, or you can extract similarities and commonalities from people. The third one is Zappa versus Sapper. And this is something that, you know, my old sports coach told me about, and it's something that I, you know, really, really took on, and it's really important in getting people to want to be comfortable around you. And there's two types of people in the world. There are people that will sap your energy, and there are people that will zap you and zap your energy. And, you know, you may be friends with someone that, you know, they can be a bit negative sometimes. You know, sometimes hanging out with them is a little bit of an effort or a little bit of a chore, but, you know, you're still friends with them. But under no circumstances did you ever introduce them to your other friends, because it's fine for you to deal with that, but you don't really want to bring other people to have to deal with that as well. So, you know, not being a sapper and being a zapper is one of the ways that you can actually, you know, build strong rapport and start getting to the introductory rapport with people. Mm-hmm. One called reciprocity or utility, which I call it. And this is just a case of, by, you know, if I give something to somebody else, they're more likely to give something back to me. Then we've got mirroring, which is the fifth one. And mirroring is, I'm sure people might have heard this. It's the case where if you're in an interaction with somebody and they, you know, they lean back, you lean back, you lean forward, they lean forward, you know, you guys start mirroring each other's actual body language. Now, this is a way of showing people that you're on the same team. And that can actually, in the short term, increase rapport. So, which kind of leads us to the last one, recognition, which is by far my favorite, because out of all the different rapport accelerators that I've used, you know, this is by far one of the most effective. And I think it kind of plays into people's vanity. But I learned this from watching my school teacher. And we went to like a school reunion a couple of years after finishing high school. And this guy, he'd go around the room and he'd talk to people for no more than like 45 seconds a minute. Really, really short interactions. But every single person he left, they were just beaming. Like, you know, like someone had given them the winning lottery ticket. Like every single person he spoke to. And I was like, how is this guy able to make people so engaged and so happy in just a space of such a short space, such a short space of time? And this was just consistent. He'd go around the room, you know, just talking to people. And every time he left, the same thing. They were just beaming, really, really happy, really positive. So I kind of, you know, I cornered him at the party. I cornered him and was like, okay, so you've got to teach me this thing that you're doing because it's just brilliant. And he said, hey, you know, it's very, very simple. All I do is whenever I meet someone, I remember a personal detail about them. And it doesn't even have to be their name. And then when I see them again, I recall that personal detail. And, you know, so simple. But since I started incorporating that, I mean, it has by far been some of the most effective ways of, you know, just turbocharging rapport with people. I mean, I'd, you know, meet someone for the first time. We'd have a short conversation. And, you know, there are ways of extracting certain personal details out of people in a very, very natural way. There's some conversational styles that you can use to do that. But then I'd learn things or they'd say something about something personal to them. So maybe it'd be something about their family or where they grew up or, you know, their passion, interest. And I'd make sure to remember this one detail. And then the next time I'd see them, I'd ask them about it or I'd recall it or I'd say, oh, you know, you're from, you know, you, I remember you're from this obscure little village in France. I read something about it on the internet or whatever it may be, but I recall the personal detail. And this, you know, this technique worked like phenomenally. And it was one of the things that I really, really used a lot when I first got to Los Angeles because, you know, especially in a city like that, people are meeting so many different people all the time. And, you know, to show that A, you paid attention because you were listening, and B, it's kind of a flatter to the ego to say, not only have I paid attention, but, you know, I've taken the investment into you that I can actually remember something personal about you. It's probably one of the things that was most effective when I came out here. One technique, you know, that anybody can just go and start using straight away.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely phenomenal. I agree, again, 100%. It's very odd how quickly... I think the thing that the reason that works so well is because nobody does it. Almost nobody does it. Most people have these superficial conversations with somebody just to pass the time, and you know they don't really pay attention. It's kind of like blah blah blah. Let me kind of waiting for their turn to talk, kind of a thing, because people are kind of showing off in front of each other. Oh yeah, well this is what I've got. But when you figure out something that you can lock in your brain and about another person, especially if it's something that they're that makes them smile or they're really interested in or a hobby or, you know, things like that. It is dramatic the next time you see them. I mean, even if it's 2 months down the road and you recall, it's like, how's that going? Or, you know, something like that. And it is weird. It's almost like you punch that person in the face because they kind of step back and they're like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They don't know a lot of people don't know what to say because they weren't expecting it. And so it's a definite like frame shift and frame breaker right then, and you have basically demonstrated a trait that's not common at all amongst people. Then that's the ability to pay attention and recall things and be interested in other people, because most people aren't interested in other people; they have no empathy at all. So, yeah, I agree totally.
One of the ways that, you know, is, I mean, I know some people listening to this will be like, okay, well, how do I find out what to recognize? Like, how do I find out something that they like?
Yeah, let's go with that. Good.
And I've had, you know, thousands upon thousands of conversations with people, and studying all the conversations that my students have had, there is this pattern of, you know, and I've narrowed it down to 6 things that, if somebody talks about these 6 things, or if you know these 6 things about somebody, you know, only your closest friends will know these 6 things, will know all these 6 things. And so when you systematically in a conversation, you know, bring it up in a natural way, and as like I said, there's ways of doing this naturally in a way that looks very organic. But there's 6 things that will, 6 topics of conversation that will give you all the information about a person that you will ever need to be able to recognize. And first one is their hobbies and interests, you know, why they do what they do, where they came from, mm-hmm. their family life, what they were like as a child, and their friends. And those six copies of conversation, like any one of those six, they will give you the, like, a mountain of information about a person. Not only is your rapport with that person, you know, going through the roof, because, you know, if you think about those six things, who knows those six things about you? You know, your closest friends. And, you know, when you're having a conversation with somebody and, you know, you're telling somebody these things, you're going to feel very, very enamored towards them. But on the flip side, if you're trying to find things that you can use to recognize about people, every time I go into a brand new, you know, I meet people newly, I always have this in the back of my head that over the course of the interaction with them, I'm going to learn as many of these six things as I can, because it's going to give me, A, something this person's really, 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 you know, has very, very valuable and core to their being, and a lot of things that I can use to remember. So those are the you know, little conversational tricks that you can use, you know, six topics of conversation that, A, you'll never have a boring conversation with somebody if you're, you know, you're thinking about, I want to know these things. But, you know, you have to have an active interest in people. I think one of the ways that I was able to do this easily was that I actually have a genuine interest in people. I love meeting new people. I love all the stories that, you know, people have. And you have to have a genuine interest in people. And by having a genuine interest in people and then kind of delving into these particular parts of their, you know, of their personality and their life, you're going to have a mountain of information, you know, that you can use to recognize. You're going to know, you know, exactly what it is that they're, what their motivations are, what they want, how you can possibly help them. Now, you're going to be a person that, you know, because nobody does this. No one does this. And especially in the high-end social circles, all the people, you know, that have access to these social circles or the keys to unlock, you know, to unlock these social circles, they're very socially savvy. You know, they meet a lot of people all the time, and they really appreciate this type of behavior. They really appreciate when someone does this, because they can recognize that, hey, people don't do this often, and B, this is somebody that I'm going to want to have around. And so when you're doing this with, you know, I met a really, at the time, she was pretty famous. She's not so much famous now. I think she's had one too many drug issues. But at the time, she was pretty famous. And I met her through her assistant. And this is the exact same way that I got talking to her. I was talking to her assistant about a bunch of different things, but based on this framework. And, you know, when her assistant came back into the UK, she was doing she was there for a movie. Her assistant phoned me up and was like, hey, would you like to meet her? Come hang out with all of us. And I got to meet a whole bunch of cool celebrities, but just using this particular framework. So it's something that works especially well when you're trying to get into the high-end social circles.
Yeah, no, it makes sense, because, you know, for the most part, everyone's always on the take around these people anyway. And just in general, but, you know, for the most part, everyone's on the take. And so if you can come into that situation and deliver value to people, I mean, it's really funny when people say, when they're trying to say, what makes me valuable to other people? Well, it's giving them value. I mean, kind of not saying duh, but kind of, right? But that it's that one thing that I guess a lot of people just don't get. And so there's almost a, what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, indifference is kind of overused. I like using it, but it's not necessarily indifference. It is not in the context that most people use it. In the context I use it is when you're indifferent, it's you're in a situation delivering value to people, and you don't really care what happens in the end. And so it's kind of this, you're free, kind of free flowing. There's no expectations. And people sense that and they dig that, because they know that you're not after anything from them. You're just being a cool dude who's, you know, helping out or who's, you know, having fun. And, you know, they don't have to worry about you know, trying to, you know, sneak in or rob them. Or, I mean, you know, that's going a little far, but you know what I'm saying? It's not you're not on the take. I mean, again, specifically in that crowd, you know, and you know this, and I know this, you know, the more and more successful we become, you know, obviously running these types of businesses and stuff. I mean, the more and more, kind of, I don't want to say sharks, but, you know, people just start coming out of the woodwork. It's like if you win the lottery, right? I mean, who comes out of the woodwork when you win the lottery? Everybody, because everybody's on the take. But it's kind of that same type of situation where when people get famous, everybody you know, or so, even locally, even if you're a local celebrity, or even a local celebrity in a bar or club, right? You know, everybody's on the take. Everybody wants access, and but they're not delivering anything, you know, to do that. And so people, they're always on the watch, and that's what makes them. That's the socially savvy part you were talking about.
Yeah. Nail on the head. I mean, you need to have, you know, a giving. You need to be a person that gives and have that as just part of your life's philosophy. Because when you just have that as part of your life's philosophy, you're just going out and you're giving. You're not going to be concerned about whether, you know, you get anything in return for it. Because let's face it, if you're concentrating on your own life, you have this as part of your philosophy, just by the act of giving, you know, you are still, you're satisfying your own, you know, personal goals and your own personal life's value. Your life's philosophy. So anything you get in return from someone, that's a complete bonus. Your goal isn't to get something in return. Your goal is to give. So once you've done that, yeah, sure. You know, anything you get in return is a complete bonus. But it's the person that goes in, you know, giving something with the eye to get something back. Yeah, you know, I really, really preach being genuine, and you know, giving something with the intent of getting something back is disingenuous. And more importantly, really socially savvy people, and you know, if you're trying to get into the high-end social circles, these people are very socially savvy. You're going to come across as extremely manipulative, and they see that a mile off, and you know, that's not something that they're going to want to have anything to do with. I mean, I've you know, met people, and you know, I've just been like, ever since I've been just been trying to be as much of a giving person as possible, I've given, you know, just been like giving people, you know, win-win scenarios at a time. And later on, like much, much, much later, I might not have seen this person for like years even. I mean, I remember there's a specific example of a guy who used to work at this nightclub, which was on my way to a bar. So I used to have this little spot where I'd park, because nobody knew about this spot and there was always free parking. So I used to park there. It was a little bit of a way, but I used to park there and then walk to the bar that I always used to go to. But on the way, you know, I can't remember how we first got into conversation, but on the way, there's this nightclub on the way, and there's this guy who always used to be a bouncer outside. And it just came and we started having conversations, we started talking, and he came from the same part of town, the same country that I'm originally from, that my parents are from. And, you know, we just got talking about things, about, you know, being, you know, growing up as ethnic children, being immigrants, etc., etc. We got, you know, had loads of these conversations about it. And, you know, I saw this guy maybe twice a week when I used to go into that bar. And so, you know, we got into a conversation about, you know, food and how, you know, because his mum's not there anymore and he doesn't get any home cooked meals, etc., etc. So my mum came to visit. She made like, you know, this really wicked like ethnic meal that's just like a traditional staple where we're from. And I was like, all right, you know, mum, make a little bit extra because I'm going to this bar tomorrow and I'm going to take some for Tony. So she made some extra. On my way to the bar, I had some with me. And I said, hey, Tony, you know, after our conversation the other day, her mom was in town. And, you know, I thought I'd give you this, you know, she made some food. So he was like really appreciative. And I wasn't thinking of getting anything from it. From where I saw it, you know, it's just part of the philosophy of giving stuff to people. So fast forward maybe 2 or 3 years. It was a while later. Fast forward a few years now. And there's this, this is fashion party. And it's, you know, it's being held by Fashion TV and it's a whole bunch of celebrities. I think the main patron was like Samuel Jackson. And I was like, me and a couple of friends said, no, we really want to go to this. We don't really have any connection. Don't really know anyone of how to get there. But, you know, like knowing the social circle stuff that I've been doing, I was like, you know, let's try it. This is a new challenge for me. This is something that I want to see if I can actually crack this particular scene. So we got there. And you know, outside is just a mess. Like there's celebrities pulling up in limos. There's, you know, there's people trying to get in. There's like fashion people. I mean, it's just a mess. There's press, there's paparazzi, everything. So I'm thinking, okay, you know, how am I going to pull this off? There's me and all my guy friends. So I, you know, I'm coming up with all these elaborate schemes as I'm walking. You know, trying to wade through the sea of people, coming up with these elaborate ideas of everything I've learned, you know, all the techniques that I've learned, what can I use to, you know, crack this little thing. And as I'm getting there, someone shouts out my name. He's like, Greg. So I look over and lo and behold, it's Tony. And so I was like, oh, okay. You know, we got talking. I haven't seen him in a couple of years. And he said, you know, who are you here with? I said, I'm just here for a few friends. He said, look, don't queue, just come over here. He lifts the rope, and me and my guy's friends walk past all the celebrities, all the paparazzi, and we walk straight into this event. And so the funniest thing I was thinking about this was, despite all this, like the social circle techniques that I had learned, everything that I was trying to figure out, and the elaborate schemes that are coming up, it all came down to just being somebody that had a philosophy of giving. And that came back, you know, tenfold, no matter a few years later. So, I mean, that's one of the stories that I always remember, that, you know, you just have to be somebody that's giving, because you never know when it's going to come back to you, and it's going to come back to you 10 times more than what you did. But it's just a good philosophy to have as a person.
Yeah, I mean, it's very odd. I mean, what you give is what you get. I mean, you talked about reciprocity, but the funniest part about it is that most people, myself included, I like hooking people up if I can, right? But here's the deal. It's like, I don't like hooking people up. I mean, this includes, you know, girlfriends, women, friends, things like that. I don't mind doing things, and I enjoy doing things. That can mean spending money. That can mean getting people in places, that type of thing. As long as it's not expected.
Yes.
And that's the big key. As long as it's not expected, then I'm you know, it's cool. You know, we'll take customers out for dinner and stuff like that, and we'll pay for dinners, and they're like, holy cow, that's awesome. We appreciate it. And, you know, they didn't expect it, you know, which is great. And I don't mind doing that. It actually makes me happy. You know, and that may sound kind of odd to some people listening, but I know I'm not the only person who feels that way. And what you just talked about was the same thing. You've hooked this guy up to the best of your ability. And I think that's one thing maybe we need to talk about is, you know, when you're doing things, you don't have to necessarily be a person of a means to look out for somebody else or look out for someone else's best interest, because that's kind of what this is all about. It's kind of the, I got your back, right? Yeah. And that other person knows that, even if, you know, for a perfect example would be, let's say, you know, I live in North Carolina, so this is a little more rednecky, but, you know, let's say if a fight breaks out and, you know, you got a buddy who's all of 5 foot nothing, you know, 110 pounds soaking wet, but you know, regardless, he's going to be in there scrapping his ass off just because, and he's going to get his ass kicked. You know it, but he's there, right? Yeah. That type of thing goes a long way with people. And that's just one type of example, but yeah, I've seen that time and time again when, you know, it's, you know, we're talking about the giving mentality, but realistically what I think it is that you're just looking out for everybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And in turn, you know, they look out for you. And so it's kind of I like to call it being in the difference between transactional space and experiential space, and they're totally different. Like when you are going up to someone and you're trying to, and you're on the take, like if you go buy a girl a drink or buy a guy a drink, and just trying to get in the social, you're on the take. You have a transactional thing that you've just done, and the other person knows that you're basically buying their attention with a drink. Now, if you go up to them and get them a drink, walk off, or share a shot, you know, ooh, have fun, walk off, go do your own thing. Now you're in kind of, you know, experiential space, totally different. And that person knows you're not on the take. And that's kind of an example, but it seems to be kind of what you're talking about. The difference between, you know, being in transactional space with a person versus being in an experiential type space.
The example that you just gave is, you know, spot on. I mean, it's a difference of somebody going into something expecting a return, opposed to somebody, you know, just doing things just because. It's the expectation that changes everything. I mean, you do something for, you know, if someone's giving you something for nothing, you know, your dynamic is going to be completely different than if someone gives you something and says, hey, by the way, this costs X. That it completely changes the entire dynamic. And in a lot of, and especially social scenarios, that comes with a lot of resentment, because people resent you for even if it's worth the thing that is X, you know, even if it's worth what they're, it becomes resentful, because now you're talking about, okay, you're a customer and I'm a buyer. And that's not a you know, with that transactional scenario, that just socially, you never want to be in a situation where someone feels like a customer and someone else feels like a buyer. That's just, you don't want to be that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like an example I give all the time, because I know everybody's done this. So let's say I call you up and I say, Greg, man, I need some help moving my couch. You know, you may have stuff going on, but you know, if you can make it work and we're pretty close, you're like, you know what, man, no problem. I could probably be down there in an hour. I'll help you out, right? Now, if I made the exact same request, I said, Greg, man, I need a hand to move my couch. I'll pay you $5. you're likely going to be, I mean, immediately your headspace changes and you start equating that $5 versus the time.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is that you were going to do it for free.
Yeah.
Willingly, but now that you've put some type of value or some type of transaction on it, the dynamic has changed. But that is how most people operate. They operate in that, you know, hey, help me out, I'll give you $5. It's not necessarily monetarily, but in the interaction, that's pretty much what it is.
You can't put a value on what I call positive emotions, like positive human emotions. You can't put a value on that. And so if you're going to do something for someone based on just your positive human emotions, just you being a zapper, just you having strong human rapport with the person, you know, like, there's one of the things, something I teach called a social pyramid. And when I'm teaching, one of the questions I get all the time is guys say to me, oh, no, I've got this friend, you know, like I've known him for years, but he offers me no value in my social circle. Should I get rid of him? And I ask this every time. I was like, no. You never want to do that, because if that's your friend and you guys have positive human emotions and positive rapport together, like human rapport, stuff that you only get from just being able to, like, nothing transactional, you can't buy that. You know, there's no cost of that. There's no value to that. So when somebody, the first example you gave, that's based on, you know, positive human emotions. And if the time is available, then, you know, everybody would happily do that. As soon as you put a monetary value on that, then you're changing the dynamic completely. And so now you're talking about something that, you know, now it's no longer the positive human emotions taken out of it. Now you're thinking, is my time worth $5? And that's a completely different scenario you want to be in. So, I mean, you know, that you can't put a monetary value on, like, positive emotions and human rapport. You just can't do it.
No, you can't. It's, like I say, that's kind of the deadly space that people get into. And it's the thing about what you're talking about and interacting in these ways is so different, because you don't know when the payoff comes. You know what I mean? Like, you can't predict when the payoff is going to be. Whereas, you know, when you go buy something, you know that you're going to go up to the counter, or, you know, you order from a waitress or a bartender or something like this. You know that you give them money and the payoff is that I'm getting my beer right now. But in these type of situations, it's tough for a lot of people, I think, and, you know, correct me if you've seen differently, but it seems like that because they don't know when the payoff is going to be, or if there will be a payoff at all, and this is in the beginning, they don't try these types of things. But these are things that they're like, it's like a snowball rolling downhill. I mean, the momentum just builds up and builds up and builds up. And it's like you're making all these deposits, you know, into people. And then you, all of a sudden, the extractions come out. I mean, you're not extracting. They're giving it to you on their own. And it's powerful. It's really powerful. I mean, I can think of numerous times. Let me give you an example. This is a little bit different, but this happened to me when I was in New York with my dad. This was about maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And we had been out. We were there on business. I was trying to help him take over a textile company he'd been trying to take over for the longest time. And we had some meetings. And, you know, I don't really get to hang out with my dad in that type of environment ever. And so we're hanging out. You know, we went to a nice steakhouse. The type of steakhouse that doesn't have prices on the menus. You know, one of those, if you have to ask, you can't afford it type of places. And so we're in there, we drank some wine, the bill was astronomical. We walk out and, you know, we're kind of hammered. you know, granted. And we're walking around, and I look at him, and I'm like, let's go to a bar, let's go to a place, let's go hang out, you know, because I, you know, this is my dad. I mean, you don't get to hang out with your dad in a bar or a club or something like that. I mean, it's fun, it's different. And so we walk down the road, and we walk up to this one place, and the line is absolutely out the door.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably easily 100 yards long. And I was like, shit. And so I tell my dad, I was like, all right, watch this. This is going to be funny. So I walk up to the guy at the door, and I say, I'm paraphrasing. I can't remember exactly what it was. Again, I was pretty tipsy. But I just look at him and say, look, hey, here's the deal, man. My dad and I are in town from out of town, from North Carolina. He has never been in a place like this. It would be completely awesome if we could just jump line and walk right in. He has never seen anything like that before. And the guy looks at me, he goes, no problem. but see, that's the thing, is that I wasn't looking for that for me, looking at for that experience for my dad, right? Yeah. And so that guy, knowing that, helped with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because both of us were trying to give that same experience. And you know, when we were in, he was like, you know, we got a couple, he gave us a card, called the one girl, we got a couple of free drinks. My dad's like, what the hell just happened, right? Which is, you know, cool. But, you know, at the same time, it's on the way out, you know, the guy's like, how was it, man? Here's my card. If you're ever in town again, give me a call, I'll hook you up.
Yeah.
But it was just from that interaction that he saw that I was a giving person and looking out for other people that he was like, this dude's all right.
And exactly. I mean, it would have been totally different if you'd asked for yourself. Like, it wouldn't, I mean, if you'd even answered, you would have been surprised. But, you know, the fact that you were, you know, trying to give the experience to your dad, he recognized that. And he was like, yeah, cool. Okay, I will do this. I mean, I'll do the same. It's, you know, the example that you just gave illustrates it perfectly.
You there?
Yep, still here.
I thought you dropped off. All right, so you said the example I just gave was what? Sorry.
No, I said the example that you gave illustrated it perfectly.
Oh, okay, illustrated it perfectly. I didn't realize you cut off. It kind of faded off for a second there. Yeah. No, I mean, it's really odd. You know, I love talking about these types of things in human dynamics because, you know, the possibilities are endless and what you could do just by being cool. And it's not hard. It's just, again, it's just looking out for people and putting other, you know, kind of putting some other people's best interest ahead of your own, which at the end of the day is in your best interest. You know, that's awesome. So you got any other quick tips or anything like that? I mean, we got a couple more minutes left before we kind of cut this off. We've almost gone an hour, which is awesome. You know, we've got a lot of really, really great, great stuff, but, any, you know, quick things. All right. Perfect example. Here's an idea. You've obviously talked about, you know, you were dating a Miss USA contestant. You've obviously been around models and people of and women of high caliber like that. What are some of the things that you've noticed that really puts the shields up and what kind of takes them down with these type of women?
Sure. High quality women. And this is, you know, not just women of, you know, great looks, women who have their shit together, who've got their, you know, their careers together, got their personal life together, their emotional life. High quality women always have a lot invested in their social circles. Mm-hmm. And how social circles operate is that all social circles have two main functions. It's to satisfy the needs of the members and it's to survive. And if we look at the second aspect, to survive, because they've all set up to survive, they've got mechanisms to stop people who are going to be freeloaders, who stop people who are going to, you know, disrupt or cause tension in the social group. So what happens is that, you know, when you have, you know, these high quality women in these social circles, anytime they meet a guy through their social circle, their guard's down because effectively he's been pre-selected if he's allowed to be in the social circle, because that social circle is going to have all you know, all their norms and values and all the rules set aside to keep out you know, keep out people that wouldn't be of value to the circle, you know, because of all those rules, anyone that comes in, she's automatically going to be way more, you know, going to have a guard down way more to you than if she met a random guy at, you know, met a random guy at a bar, etc. So obviously the best, you know, the best scenario is to be with, and this works for guys, this works, you know, if you've got any female listeners, this works for that as well. But obviously the best scenario is to actually get introduced into a social circle. There's a little, you know, something I found, and I feel like some other guys might notice as well, but there's a little like hack, a little like shortcut you can do to try and to actually get her thinking the same way, even though you haven't actually been introduced to a social circle. And it's a it's just a way of introducing yourself. And it's something I call the $1 million introduction. And it works great in business networking environments as well. But specifically what you said in terms of, you know, high quality women, if you are introduced to her, even by a stranger, someone that she doesn't know, in a specific type of way, she's going to already, you know, start rolling down, you know, her mind's going to be going down the same path as if you were introduced to her in the social circle. Let's say it's introduced to a social circle, you know, makes it go 60% down the way. This is going to get you like 35, 40. And the way you do it, it's like, say, you know, me and you were at a bar, we saw, you know, really high quality, you know, a girl that's really, really good looking, and you were interested in her. Rather than you go up and talk to her, I'd go and talk to her. I'd be, you know, really friendly, really nice. And I'd say, hey, you know what? I've got to introduce you to this awesome guy called Brad. You know, he's, you know, just such a cool guy. You're going to absolutely love him. I think you're going to get along like a house on fire. Now, that type of introduction, the only other time somebody would introduce someone to her like that is her friends who are trying to hook her up with someone in her social circle. Right. So immediately triggers something in her brain that's like, okay, this guy, you know, I've got to, and she'll have to try and be on her best behavior because it's a social thing. She's not going to want to let down the fact that, you know, I've just said, this is a really, really great guy. You've got to meet him. He's going to be really cool. You guys are going to get along really well. She's going to want to play up to that. So that's a little like, you know, a little technique that I use sometimes. If I, obviously getting into the social circle is the most effective thing. But if that for some reason hasn't happened, or, you know, you're in, you've got to work really quickly, that's a real cool trick that you can, you and a friend can use, or someone and a friend can use when they're out, that kind of does, you know, almost the same thing to an extent. It gets her thinking. I mean, she's going to meet you after I've introduced you like that. She's going to be very excited and she's going to be very happy to meet you. And you're so much further down the road to a significant relationship.
Yeah. No, it makes total sense, man. I've seen, again, same type of things. The one thing about that that's really cool is that, and at some point I'll talk about priming a little bit more, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, when you're going cold on someone, the only thing they have to go by as a first impression that is what you look like, and kind of how you're interacting with other people in the room, if they have even noticed. If they haven't, you know, right when you're up on them, they have to make a snap judgment based on that first impression. So they haven't been primed either way on what to expect. But if you can prime someone to have an expectation of you ahead of time, and this has been proven numerously across tons of psychological experiences. I mean, you can prime someone one way and then prime another group the other way, and the same person can be up in front, and each person will have a different experience based on just that framing and priming that happened ahead of time. So that makes absolute sense to me. Just the fact of you walking up to him and saying, hey, you know what? My buddy's over here. He's completely awesome. You'll like him. You know, just from that,
yeah.
It doesn't matter if she's friends with that person or not. In her head and in somebody else's head, this person is cool enough to be introduced to me, period. And not only that, but this person thinks they're awesome. I don't have to necessarily respect that person, but if they're cool enough, then, again, that works. It's kind of like, have you ever watched that show How I Met Your Mother?
No, I haven't actually.
Yeah, okay. It's, you know, Barney, the guy who Neil Patrick Harris plays, it's really funny to me because, you know, obviously he's a womanizer on this show, but he's gay in real life. That dichotomy completely trips me out. But when they're in bars and their little watering hole bar, he always goes up to girls and he goes, hey, have you met my friend Ted? And that's like the pickup line. And then, you know, they introduce his friend Ted and Ted goes and talks to her. And, you know, I've seen that type of stuff work. It's funny. It's hilarious. But even that short of a introduction, something like that, is better than doing it yourself.
Yeah, 100% every single time.
Yeah,
you can do a really kick-ass introduction for your friend, or your friend can do a really kick-ass introduction for you. Then you know it's night and day. I mean, you like just go out, like, for guys listening to this, just go out and try it and just see for yourself. It's, you know, I mean, one of the things I used to use, and this is something that I do when it's one of the things I did when I first got into LA, actually. I'd go to like these high-end nightclubs by myself, and I actually go and look for a group of guys who were like sitting at a table, or who bought loads of drinks, but they were by themselves, didn't have any girls. So I'd go and find the guys, and I'd start talking to them, and again, you know, shoot them, crack a couple of jokes, and then I'd say to the guys, oh, I'm just going to go talk to some girls. So then I would go and look for girls, you know, who were like on their own or in a group by themselves. And the idea in my head was, okay, I'm going to get these girls and I'm going to bring them over to introduce them to the guys. And the one thing that I always used to say to the girls before I'd get them is like, okay, listen, you know, these guys are really, really great. They're awesome. But, you know, you have to kind of be, don't talk about, you know, money, or don't talk about anything like that, because these guys, you know, they're so much fun and they just want to come out having a good time. But sometimes girls get a little bit, you know, they get a little bit over the top with the money and et cetera, et cetera. And what would happen was the girls would be like, okay, and they'd want to be on their absolute best behavior,
right?
You know, and they'd never met me. So I'd go and introduce them to these guys, and they'd be on the absolute best behavior. And the guys would be like, how did you get them to do that? And the only thing, all I did was, like you said, I primed the meeting beforehand saying, you know, you guys have to be really, really, really awesome. Because, you know, like sometimes we go out and meet girls and then, you know, they can be a little bit sap. And, you know, these guys only get to go out like once a month. And, you know, but they're really, really awesome guys. You're going to absolutely love them. So let's go.
That's the exact same thing. I mean, from a frame perspective, I did with my dad to get in the door. You know, oh, he never gets to come out and do stuff like this. So, you know, if you could hook it up and you could be on your best behavior, you know, it'd be awesome, because, you know, these guys are, they're ready to throw down and have a good time and chill, and they're fun. But man, they day in and day out, they're just getting hit up for this and that. And, you know, they just come out to have, you know, that type of thing, right? Where you're, again, you're looking out for those dudes, and, mm-hmm. you know, people respond to that, which is really cool. I'll tell you something I've done, and this is exactly what you're talking about, but it's a little bit more of on an acute level. Is I've done this numerous times, especially when I would be out of town by myself or something like that, and I was like, man, I just want to go out and have some fun because I'm bored. Because, you know, being in a hotel by yourself all the time sucks. So you go out and you walk into a bar or whatever it is. You walk up, you grab a drink, you kind of, you know, kind of get a feel for what the groups are, how they're interacting, and you find, and typically you'll find a group of people that are trying to have fun. It could be a couple, or it could be like a group of, you know, even women to men, something like that. And, you know, if they're hanging around the bar, you buy them a shot.
Yeah.
Just buy them a shot, and then, hey man, you know, and then you tell them like, hey, I'm only in town for a couple of days, just trying to hang out and have a good time. And just by doing that, it's amazing. People are like, oh, you don't want to spend money on people. That is bullshit. I hate that rule.
Thank you for saying it, because I've heard this so many times, and you get that, you know, that argument of never buy a drink, and, you know, you don't want to spend. I actually hate it when people say that. Like, if it comes from the right place, it's absolutely normal, and it's absolutely, you know, totally okay, and actually quite, you know, social, like socially savvy to actually do that. So I'm just glad that you've actually said that, because I hate it when people say, don't buy people drinks, or they don't spend.
What's like, it's like the easiest way to get carte blanche access to any bar or club is to go there on their off nights, get to know the people, treat them well, tip well, have a good time. Meet the owner if you can, because chances are he's probably, you know, schlepping around on the off nights. And there you go. So I've done this time and time again, where you walk into a place and yeah, you're possibly going to spend a little bit of money up front, more than you probably were thinking, but it comes back in spades, because, you know, it doesn't take long for, you know, a couple of times and people know who you are and you're this cool dude, that the drinks become free. The entrances become free. And so you've kind of prepaid, but in the long run, you come out way ahead. So you're basically investing into that situation. It works.
Techniques. All these are techniques that, and, you know, they're techniques of part of, you know, the bigger strategy and bigger framework that I used when I got to LA to get into the high-end social circles that quickly. I mean, everything we've talked about today, what you just mentioned there with, you know, going to the off nights, they're all, you know, all bits, little pieces of the puzzle around the framework of, you know, accessing social circles that I used to get into the high-end social circles in Los Angeles. And it's totally doable by anybody. Like, it really, really is. It's just knowing that framework and having the little pieces of puzzle to put together.
Yeah. I want to cover one more myth really quickly, and I want to get your take on this before we close out. And that is the myth that certain cities are meaner than others. Because I, in my experience, again, I'm a country dude, kind of, I know, from, you know, the originally kind of from the backwoods, right? And I've gone to every major city you can think of, and I have no problems anywhere I go interacting. Nobody ever treats me poorly or any of these things that you hear time and time again. And you know, I attribute a lot of this to things we're talking about. What do you think about that myth that, you know, oh, such and such is, it's hard here because of this, or, you know, people are mean here, or this and that?
No, I really don't. I mean, I don't think that's such an issue. What I think does happen is that some places have, they just require you to show your investment a little bit differently. Like, some places, you know, you have to, you won't have to show much investment into the person. Some, because all social circles want to survive, some places are a little bit more wary because they don't know if you're going to just come in and be a freeloader. I mean, nothing is worse for a social circle than a freeloader. Someone that's going, and that just goes back to, you know, tens of thousands of years ago when we were running around in the plains and, you know, a freeloader would see the other warring tribe come over and just run off and not tell anybody. I mean, that's it. Being aware of freeloaders is a very, very deep psychological, you know, phenomenon. Like, and it's, everyone has it. And especially when you have a social group, it's a real issue. So some places are just a little bit more, you know, wary of freeloaders. And that's it. But again, if you go out, if you're going out and you're just, you know, being a zapper, being a cool person, giving people positive emotions, and you're just being, you know, a positive human being, and then you're actually investing people, then no, everywhere is exactly the same. It's just the case, as you know, the people that usually say that are the people who are going out looking for something. The people that usually say, oh, you know, this place is meaner than the other, you know, they're the ones that are likely, you know, they're coming across as they want something or they're looking for something from the interaction. Because if you're not, if you're just, you know, that's just part of your life philosophy, you're just going out there and you're being friendly to people. Obviously, every city has slight differences in social etiquette, but, you know, I wouldn't say there's anywhere that's meaner than anywhere else. I just think there's some places, you know, you have to kind of show a slightly different way of investing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's strange. You know what I pay attention to a lot when I'm out and about, and you talk about social circles surviving and these type of things. One of the things that almost always triggers a kind of an internal response for me is when we're somewhere and, you know, we're, especially if we're like out and about and people want to split checks. Yeah. So, and you know, maybe this is just me, but like with guys and people that I hang out with that are close, somebody just grabs it, right? Like, somebody just gets this one, and then somebody gets this one, and somebody gets this one, and it just kind of rotates like that. And so a lot of times when I'm in places and, you know, people are trying to split up everything, you know, I'm always like, oh, this sucks, number one. But number two, to me, it's almost like, all right, you don't get it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not even sure that's even valid, but it's just the way I feel about things a lot of times. You know, in that regard, that, you know, just shit, man. We'll go somewhere and the bill will come. And I, like, for instance, we were in Las Vegas. It was me and Hudson and Fran and my buddy Brian and one of our customers on the Venus side just hang out at a bar. You know, the tab for the drinks came. My buddy Brian just grabbed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and just like, just grabbed it and go. Hudson did the same thing when, you know, we were in another place. He just grabbed that one. I grabbed one. It was just like, somebody just grabs it. And it's, I don't, like I say, I'm not sure if that has any direct.
Why that works between close, because the reason why it, the scenario everyone splits the checks happens is because, you know, if there's it's back to freeloaders. If you don't know the people that you're with that well, then everyone's scared or afraid of the fact that someone's going to be a freeloader. You know, nobody wants to ever get taken advantage of. When you, I mean, I do the same thing what you're just describing with my, you know, close friends, because we all know that, you know, that not, we all have each other's best interests, that someone, everyone's going to get one, and, you know, no one's going to try and take advantage of someone else. So it's completely fine. Not saying that, you know, in those other scenarios, people are actually going to take advantage of someone, but they're just not sure. You know, it usually happens when people aren't 100% certain of the other people around. You know, tight-knit social circles where everybody knows everyone and everyone knows the exact scenario, it's fine. But the thing, again, as back to freeloaders, it just takes one freeloader to fuck it all up. Because if you have a group of you and you're all, you know, you're all, like, one of you grabs the check this time, another person grabs the check that time, you know, but one person the whole night is just, you know, leeching off everyone else, then slowly each of that group is going to be like, well, I don't want to grab that next bill. Well, I don't want to grab that one. And then your whole thing kind of falls apart just from one freeloader. So that's kind of, you know, I get why times, you know, groups do that, because it's just to not, you know, be taken advantage of, because freeloaders are poisonous. They are, I mean, I'm making it sound bad, but they are poisonous for social circles, like really poisonous. And you never want to come across as one. And the minute a social circle identifies there's one there, they're going to get rid of that person quick.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it's, yeah, I guess what I'm feeling in those type of situations is it's just more of an acute feeling of a bigger kind of thing that what you're talking about, which is interesting. I never really thought about it that way, but I don't know. It's just for me, I've just always been that way. You know, I've always, I mean, my dad, I looked up my dad, and he's just always been a guy like that. And he's over responsible, if that makes sense. So he, even if it's not his responsibility, he'll claim it, that type of thing. And so I've just kind of grown up with that and seen that. And so a lot of how I interact with people is based on that, and, you know, looking out for people and that type of thing. And so, you know, coming in a separate situation where, you know, it's not, that's not how it works, it's just weird to me. You know, it just, I don't, it just is. And it's not good or bad. It just is. Anyway, I tell you what, man, it's been really good talking to you. Really quickly, you've got an interesting product out that I think some of the guys may want to check out. Can we give a quick, you know, 5-minute, 2-minute highlight of what we're going to talk about in this thing and what it's going to do for them and that type of stuff?
Sure. I mean, this is everything we've talked about today. I go into way, like, more detail. I'm totally going down the rabbit hole for a program I call the Social Supremacy Blueprint. And it outlines a step-by-step system of everything you need to know to be able to infiltrate. Well, firstly, to be able to be a person that people want to be around, because that's the first milestone. I mean, if you want to get into high-end social circles or any type of social circles, there are certain milestones. And the very first one is you need to be somebody that people want to be around. So we go, so, you know, that's the first thing the program addresses, social intelligence and social awareness, being somebody that everybody wants to be around and being somebody that people are comfortable with. Then it goes on to social circle dynamics. And social circle dynamics are some of the things that we talked about today in terms of how do social circles and how do social groups operate? You know, what, how to identify, you know, the people of the social power, how to identify the person's going to introduce you to the social circle, how to, you know, not come across as a freeloader, how to really navigate these social circles. We also talk about the rapport ladder, which I touched on today, the rapport ladder and the rapport accelerator. And this is how you get to introductory rapport with anybody at any time, and how to navigate, you know, how everybody views you. You know, that person that everybody wants to meet and everybody wants to be a part of, why is it that they're like that? Why is it that everybody wants to be in rapport with this person? You know, we talk about that and how to actually gain that status. Then it goes on to talk about how to build a social circle, because, you know, once you've got access to social circles, you know, your personality may be suited to, hey, you know, I already know a few people, I like being the center of attention, how do I build a social circle? And the benefits of that is that, you know, you can create a social circle that exactly does what you want it to do. And it will not only funnel the type of people you want into your life, but it's going to be set up in a way that has all the norms and values that you want. And it will satisfy exactly everything you need. We also go into, you know, your social pyramid. I touched on it today, but this is how to manage the people in your life, who to have closest to you, who to have a bit further out away from you, what type of people you need in your inner circle to achieve the certain things that you want to achieve. After that, we go into social circle seduction. And that's, you know, that's really how do you use this for your dating and social life? Like, how do you use this to meet the most beautiful women? How do you use this to meet the most pre-qualified women to you? And there's everything from, you know, how to do it on your own, how to have do it for a group of other guys, and how to kind of create a kind of Hugh Hefner type lifestyle. So it's a fully comprehensive social circle training that just goes through every aspect of social circle that you need. So that takes you from zero, having known nobody, to creating your ultimate social life, whatever that may be.
Yeah, awesome, man. Guys, if you want to check that out, just I created a short link for you. It's highgravitymail.com/social circle. We'll just make it easy. You can go check that out. I mean, it's good stuff. Again, he's just going to cover a lot more of the things that we've talked about here, and there's a lot more. I mean, I've just in this conversation, I've written down like 15 things more that we could have talked about, but we just don't have enough time. So, Greg, I really appreciate you being, you know, on the call with me in this interview. I definitely want to do another one of these. Again, you know, just like I've told everyone that is, you know, on our list, that I only have a select number of people that I expose. Same thing. Social circle. I've only got a select number of people I'm going to expose them to, because I know, trust, and have hung out with everyone. So I know that they're legit. They're not going to take anybody for a ride, and their stuff works. So hopefully you'll be back for another one of these. What do you think?
Hey, I enjoyed it. Thank you. Hey, thank you so much for having me on. And, you know, anytime, you know, it was a lot of fun. I really appreciate, you know, you taking the time to put all this together and listen, you know, just letting us chat and teach all your guy stuff. But yeah, anytime, man, I'm up for it. I had a good time, and I appreciate, you know, you taking me on for this.
Yeah, not a problem. So for Greg Greenway, I'm Brad Howard, and that's your High Gravity Mail Podcast.